The president wants to spy on 200 million Americans without a warrant. Has he read this document, which he was sworn to uphold?
Now, I will not have you libel Abraham Lincoln.
I don't understand the problem with registering guns. We register cars.
Mark Levine brings you the news the government doesn't want you to know.
Today, an explosive story about connections between white supremacists and Islamic terrorists.
When there's a conflict between Scalia's conservative values and the Constitution of the United States, he throws away the Constitution.
We do have secret prisons. That is not what America's all about.
Let's go to Mark in 5, 4, 3, 2.
Good evening, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. 1 week from today, Barack Obama will be sworn in as the 44th President of the United States. And although we're in the greatest economic difficulty since the Great Depression, although there are two wars, although Americans have given the lowest approval rating, or perhaps I should say the highest disapproval rating to the current occupant of the White House, people are thinking forward. People are looking at the Obama presidency. They're talking about his cabinet picks, probably even more talking about which puppy his two young daughters will choose. My vote, Labradoodle. Remember this prediction. In any case, everyone is focusing on Barack Obama. But before we go there, we should remember this snapshot in time. They say it is always darkest before the dawn. The current occupant of the White House, George W. Bush, was inaugurated 416 weeks ago. Today, he has 1 week left. And so as we end that 417-week tunnel, as we cross the 416-mile marker looking for that last week, I think it's appropriate to take a step back and to think about what we've been through, to think about not just how the president is viewed today, but how historians will view this president, the current president, George Walker Bush, for generations to come. He's not very popular right now, but in his press conference today, George W. Bush said he'd be fairly confident that history would judge him better than the American people judge him today. Well, there are a few Americans that still like the current occupant of the White House. At least I think the guy next to me does. His name is Mike Lane. He's frequently on the show, of course. He's a Republican strategist. He may even like the current vice presidential occupant of the White House, Dick Cheney, a man who has an approval rating of less than 16%. So less than 1 in 6 Americans approve of him. We'll find out what Mike Lane's view is of the legacy of the Bush administration and talk about it. Mike, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Mark, thank you for having me back. Pleasure to be here. Two things right out of the box. Number one, I'll note that Congress's approval rating is down at 9% now. So that's where the Democrats are compared to the Republican administration. And secondly, I hope it's not a Labradoodle with all of these with all of these dogs out there that need good homes and need rescuing that are hanging out in shelters for President Obama to go out and buy from a breeder a designer dog, Labradoodle, just doesn't send the right message. He needs to rescue a dog that needs a good home.
See, I would expect it from a Republican. The first thing you attack is the puppy. But okay, let's move
on.
let's move on.
Mark, there are dogs that need rescuing.
There are certainly dogs that need rescuing.
I have a rescue dog.
Let me ask you this. Are you one of the few Americans that actually approves of the job that George W. Bush and Vice President Cheney have done? If they asked you in a poll, do you strongly approve, mildly approve, mildly disapprove, or strongly disapprove, as they ask in these polls, what would you say about Bush and Cheney?
Well, Mark, I'm going to surprise you. Although I think the president has done a number of good things, which we'll get to over the course of this hour, and I do think he's done a number of good things, and I will defend him vigorously where he deserves to be defended. I think overall, most of the country, and I would put myself in this class, we're ready for a new administration. I don't think the Obama administration is the right one, but I'm ready for a new administration.
I will agree with you that most of the country is ready for a new administration. I would argue that George W. Bush is ready for a new administration. I don't think anyone is happier to leave the White House than George W. Bush, but I'm going to insist on asking the question.
His time in the Klieg lights are over. Is that what you're going to tell
me? Yes, but my question is not today. My question is really a historian's question. If you were asked 10 years from now, did you approve of the Bush presidency? Not as of today, but the entire almost 8 years, the 8 years that end a week from now. What is your verdict? I mean, mine is clearly strongly disapproved. What's yours?
I think history is going to judge this president better than the current atmosphere, but I will say that if I had to judge him right now,
in the totality of
the 8 years, I would put mildly approve.
Mildly approve. Okay. here are the things that I think of when I think of George W. Bush, when I think writ large, not of the specific things. I can't help but remember how he got into office. To me, that was the greatest scandal in American legal history. I mean, Dred Scott, which upheld slavery, at least had some logical sense in the law. In this case, the Supreme Court lawlessly put George Bush in power when the American people voted for Al Gore. I can never forget that. And indeed, 416 weeks ago today, I was on the streets of Washington protesting the inauguration.
I'm glad you've grown up, Mark. That's good.
I will never, ever forgive the Supreme Court for that violation of law. I don't think coup d'etats are proper in America. But let me just mention, and then we'll tick off one by one. When I think of George Bush, I think of Katrina. I think of all the people that suffered there. I think of two wars, including that are unfinished, that were badly fought, including a war against a country that never attacked us in Iraq to find weapons of mass destruction that aren't there. I think a violation of the Constitution. You know, I always, when I think of George Bush, I think of the fact that probably no president has shredded our Constitution, which I keep by my side. I don't think George Bush keeps by his side more than he. Obviously, I think of the Depression, the greatest depression it appears since the Great Depression. I think of massive deficits, cutting taxes, increasing government spending, lots of earmarks that George Bush shares with Congress, massive deficits, so much so that every single American man, woman, and child owes $35,000 to the government, an extreme amount of money. So to me, I think of incompetence and corruption. I think he'll be remembered that way. I think he'll be remembered as one of the worst presidents in American history.
Mark, what he'll be remembered for is he kept America safe, and he made America safer than the day it was when he took office. Nobody expected that we were going to have this horrific attack on our own homeland soil on September 11th of 2001. It took place, and the president then became focused, sometimes to the exclusion of other things, which is going to hurt him, but he focused on protecting and keeping the American people safe and secure. And no one would have bet that we would have gone the rest of his presidency without another attack on American soil. He accomplished it. That's his legacy. That's what he'll be remembered for.
Anything else?
Oh, a lot of things, but that's the prime thing.
Well, we can talk about that. I just want to get your... I gave you a laundry list. Let's hear your laundry list, and then we'll take them one by one.
Okay, the other things, of course, the significant thing that he did that he'll be remembered for was winning militarily the Iraq War, when it was said that, this is not a war you can win militarily. He, against all odds, backed the surge. He went ahead and did it, and we won a military victory in Iraq, and the al-Qaeda in Iraq is now decimated and, you know, just ineffective, and we can hand over a safer and secure Iraq to the Iraqi military to protect their own, which we are actually doing now. We handed over three more provinces. We've hit 15, solidly 15 of the 18 benchmarks that we wanted to hit before we started pulling out. That is a significant win. The establishment of accountability in education through No Child Left Behind was a significant breakthrough. You can argue a lot of different sides of this, but I think the fact that we have established a very successful and popular Medicare prescription drug program is certainly something the president's going to be remembered for. And finally, the fact that on his first day of office, just about, he took that turkey, that pig in a poke called the Kyoto Treaty, and he threw it out the back door of the White House and said, we just aren't going to go down this road. It's BS science, and it's not what this we're not going to follow the trends. And the fact that we have slowed any ridiculous global warming legislation to the point now where this alleged scientific consensus has fallen apart, and there's no more any consensus on global warming, and we have the ability to step back and look at this and not waste money and not ruin our economy. That's another great achievement of the president. I have some more, but those are the highlights.
So the highlights are shelving the Kyoto Treaty, the Medicare prescription drug benefit, that's a highlight. No Child Left Behind, that's a highlight. The war in Iraq, and you said keeping America safe. We'll deal with each of those one by one. But let me just say this. I strongly disapprove of what the president's done. When thinking about good things the president's done, I really had to struggle. I do like he extended daylight savings time a month. I like daylight savings time. I give George Bush credit for that. I did find something.
I wouldn't put it in his top 10, but I'm with you. It was a good thing.
That's about the only thing I could think of, and I'm giving him credit for that, even though I think Congress played a major role. But no, we'll give him daylight savings time. You did say, though, that you mildly approved. So let me hear from you the things that you disapproved.
Well, I think you hit one pretty strong, Mark, and we've talked about this, and I've admitted it freely over the course of whatever time it is that we've been debating, I think close to 3-4 years, and that is the deficit spending. It just, you know, is... it is unacceptable. It is not what the Republican Party has historically been about. The Republicans have been the deficit hawks. George Bush took that off the table. He let the budgetary process with the ridiculous number of earmarks, perhaps most elegantly identified by the Bridge to Nowhere, get away with the whole thing. And he should have exercised his veto power a lot more viciously and vindictively than he did. I think he's up to like maybe 3 vetoes or something like that now. His budgetary policy is perhaps his single greatest failing.
Let's go through what you think was his greatest victory, which you said was keeping America safe. In your view, and you can disagree with me, but what we did at Abu Ghraib, what we did in Guantanamo, taking American citizens, putting them in jail without trial, secret prisons, monitoring hundreds of millions of Americans' phone calls without a warrant, were all these necessary to keep America safe?
I believe they were.
All of them? Really?
When history looks at these
waterboarding
things,
everything.
Oh, waterboarding, definitely. Waterboarding, when we waterboarded Sheikh Khalid Mohammed and got him to spill his guts on everything he knew, Mark, that gave us untold numbers of important treasures of intelligence. That was the single most important breaking of an intelligence agent that we had in the entire Bush administration. The waterboarding was what did it. That was absolutely necessary, and it paid off. That in itself probably saved thousands upon thousands upon thousands of American lives, an untold amount of destruction in this country.
Now, I understand that's the view, that's the spin by, I get it. According to Director Mueller of the FBI, it wasn't necessary. According to him, we got no useful information for waterboarding whatsoever. What do you know that the director of the FBI does?
Well, the director of the FBI was not there, okay? This was not an FBI operation, it was a CIA operation, so I don't know where he's talking from.
Tell me who would back up what you say. Who would tell you? Dick Cheney, I guess?
The president and the vice president both said so today, yes.
Anyone who's actually in the CIA who would back this up?
I believe, yes.
I don't think so. From what I've heard from all accounts.
Everybody says that breaking of Sheikh Khalid Mohammed was the critical thing that we did.
Breaking. But see, what...
Breaking him.
The question is...
Breaking him and making him sing like a bird.
The question is whether you break him by torture or whether you break him by trickery. And all the people I've read from the CIA who've talked about this before Congress say that actually trickery is more effective than torture.
In some cases, this was a tough bastard, okay? This was a tough guy. He was grizzled. He was looking forward to dying for his country. And when he looked at the possibility of death by drowning in the eyes, he started to sing like a bird. It kept America safe, and it kept us from being attacked for 7 years.
You know, Mike, I think that's quite a retelling of history. But let me just in general, and we've got to take a break soon, what you've defended, shredding the Bill of Rights, spying on Americans without a warrant.
No.
Putting people in jail without trial. Torture, and I call it torture. You may not call it torture. Secret prisons. All these things. Don't you think that they harmed the perception of America around the globe?
I'm not particularly concerned about that. I was concerned.
So you think it has, but you're not concerned about it?
No. We have a lot of respect in a lot of quarters around the globe. I think that, you know, there were some of our European allies that were candidly very wimpy to start with.
Well, we'll get back.
They've come full circle, and they're on our team now.
Let's go back to this and invite our listeners to call in as well. We'll be right back with more right after this.
There's one just books at the library.
Il n'y a plus que des livres à la bibliothèque.
More than just books at the library.
I know. There's more than just books at the library.
I don't want to be hooked to a machine.
I want all the medical treatment available to me.
I wouldn't want my family to have to make this decision.
My doctor knows what's best for me.
An advanced directive is your life on your terms. Talk with your family. Decide what's right for you. Then put it in writing.
Documenting my wishes today means my family won't have to make heart-wrenching decisions later.
To learn more, visit www.putitinwriting.org.
1,200 American youth run away from their homes every day. The National Runaway Switchboard is here to help. 1-800-RUNAWAY. If you are a runaway, thinking about running away from home, or a parent or guardian concerned about issues facing your child, call us 24 hours a day. 1-800-RUNAWAY. In times of crisis, hope is just a phone call away. 1-800-RUNAWAY.
So I don't have my hand off the set. Gotcha.
Here again, The Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to The Inside Scoop. We're discussing, for perhaps the last time, the legacy of the current President of the United States, George W. Bush. Yes, the entire nation is focused on the future, focused on Barack Obama. But before he leaves office, I don't think we should let George Bush off scot-free. Let's talk about the man with the highest disapproval rating in all of American history, with one of the few people who at least mildly approves of his presidency. His name is Mike Lane. He's a Republican strategist. Now, Mike, you scoured your notes to find something good George Bush has done. You said the main thing he did was keep America safe. Now, I don't think it's amazing to me sort of how the rewriting of history. I mean, September 11, 2001 did happen on George Bush's watch. In August of 2001, of course, there was that famous memo that Condoleezza Rice testified about in Congress, bin Laden determined to attack the United States. We know that Clinton's national security advisors were warning Bush he had to take action, responding to the USS Cole bombings, suggesting specifically doing something in Afghanistan. And yet for 8 months, 9 months, he did nothing. He sat on that information. It's amazing to me that you say, in effect, that George Bush escapes all blame. The Bush administration escapes all blame for failing to prevent September 11th.
I think, Mark, you know, sitting on the information and doing nothing is a mischaracterization of it. The intelligence community was tracking this. They were looking for additional indicators. They were looking for hard intelligence. They were looking for something they could come up with, which is a specific event. They didn't pick any of that stuff up.
They picked some of it up. There was an attack in Paris, a threat to knock down the Eiffel Tower.
Right.
Through hijacking a plane. I mean,
right.
It's not that different.
But the World Trade Center and the Pentagon were two things, and ultimately the Capitol, which we know didn't make it, were things that they picked up no specific intelligence on. In fact, no stray intelligence on. There was nothing that was that was good. If we had had the overseas international wiretapping with domestic telephones at that time, we probably would have picked that up, but we didn't have that because, of course, the 20 hijackers that were in this country needed to communicate with home base somehow, and telephone was probably a likely way of the way they did a lot of it. Now, we know they also use internet and they use other things, but they probably made telephone calls, and if we had had the wiretapping program where we could tap overseas phone calls coming into the United States, we probably would have been able to prevent 9/11.
But we
didn't have it. George Bush started it after 9/11, and that's what kept us safe.
We didn't need it. There's an intrepid FBI agent, I'm sure you know well, by the name of Colleen Rowley, who did an investigation, found out that there were pilots that were taking pilot classes and didn't want to learn how to land the planes. They were just taking the planes off. She reported this to the FBI. They got his computer, and her superiors at the FBI said, let's not look into it. Let's just let it go. Let's not even try to get a warrant. They could have gotten a warrant. They could have prevented it. But let's face it, the FBI under George W. Bush just wasn't looking, despite the fact that while we didn't have specific intelligence about the World Trade Center, we did have specific intelligence about hijacking planes. And the only way to stop September 11th was not to put a big bubble around the World Trade Center, but was to do the things that we later did in airplanes to wall off the pilots from the passengers. Frankly, stuff that El Al in Israel had done years ago. These are things that America could have done if we'd simply taken Colleen Rowley and her warning seriously, if George Bush had taken the warning that Condoleezza Rice got in August, Bin Laden determined to attack the United States, seriously. He was on vacation.
Mark, there's no doubt that the FBI made major mistakes in this whole thing and that they had a nugget of information that, if pursued, could have turned into something that would have broken the case open in advance. But to hold the president accountable for the fact that a special agent in charge of a division didn't follow up on a report of a field agent of his, and to say that that's the fault of the president of the United States is simply not fair. There's levels of accountability.
Yes, there are.
And the president doesn't, we have 20,000 field agents. The president doesn't supervise each and every one of those 20,000 field agents.
That's true. But had the president been on alert, had the president taken taken Condoleezza Rice's memo, the one that said Bin Laden returned to attack the United States, which we know he received in August, taken Clinton National Security Advisor seriously and worked for 8 or 9 months, the culture. That's the word I'm looking for. Thank you.
You're welcome.
The culture in the FBI where people knew, hey, this is serious. And so when you get a field agent like Colleen Rowley talking about people hijacking planes, they would have said, let's explore this. Instead, we weren't on any kind of alert. George Bush was on vacation in August while we're receiving these memos, these very scary memos. I think that goes to the top. But let me go up to another issue.
We would obviously disagree on that.
Obviously. Let me go to the next issue, because the other thing that you declared is his great accomplishment. You said the minor accomplishments, No Child Left Behind, the Medicare prescription drug, Kyoto. The two major ones, you said, were keeping America safe and winning the Iraq War. It's amazing to me that winning the Iraq War you consider an accomplishment of the Bush administration when it's a war that, as our president-elect is so fond of saying, should never have been authorized, should never have been fought. In hindsight, are you saying that you think that the Iraq War should have been fought? Knowing now, if we'd known then what we know now, that there were no weapons of mass destruction, that Saddam Hussein's army was a mere shell of what it was when he invaded Kuwait, that we had no fly zones, we were watching over him, that the worst he was doing was, frankly, what a lot of Arab governments do, arming terrorists, but, frankly, less than Iran and some other countries that do it a lot worse. Knowing now what we know then, should we even have been in Iraq to begin with?
Mark, first of all, I believe it was UN Resolution 1141, if I have the number correct. What did it say? It said that Saddam Hussein had to get rid of his weapons of mass destruction, which we knew he had because we saw them when we were in there the first time, and because we know that he used them on his own people when he gassed and otherwise used weapons of mass destruction against his own people. It said not only did he have to get rid of them, but he had to disclose to the world transparently the fact that he had gotten rid of them. He was playing games. He didn't do that. Now, who thought he had weapons of mass destruction other than the President of the United States? Well, the new Secretary of State, Senator Clinton, stood on the Senate floor and said, absolutely, he has weapons of mass destruction. Congresswoman Pelosi, the Speaker of the House, said, absolutely, he has weapons of mass destruction. The previous chairman of the Intelligence Committee, Jay Rockefeller, said, absolutely, he has weapons of mass destruction. Mark, the whole world looked at the intelligence and concluded the same thing. The Brits, the Italians, everyone thought he had weapons of mass destruction. Now, the president admitted in his press conference today that that was one of his big disappointments, that intelligence was wrong. But based on the intelligence, the only person who was wrong on this whole thing was Barack Obama when he said this was a war that was not worth fighting, because under the circumstances and the intelligence that we knew of as of the time that the war started, absolutely it was a war that not only should have been fought but had to be fought.
I get your argument. Oops, we made a mistake. Oh, well, we went in, invaded a country, lost 4,500 lives, lost tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of Iraqi lives, millions of refugees, and tens of thousands of Americans walk, and I've seen them, and I know you have too, servicemen and women walking around airports missing limbs. Oops, it was a mistake. We did the best thing we could at the time. First of all, I don't remember any Clinton or Pelosi saying, absolutely.
They did. On the floor of the Senate.
Here's what they said. They said, we need to find out.
No, they didn't. They said he has weapons of mass destruction.
I remember specifically Joe Biden giving a speech, and he voted for authorization of the war. But he tried to put in a substitute amendment. And the substitute amendment says, send the inspectors in. Let's find out if they have it. And if they do, let's invade. The United Nations, I'm sure you recall, did not authorize an invasion. In fact, they specifically decided not to. They said, you know, you find the weapons and then come back. The whole purpose of the resolution was a way to tell Saddam Hussein, you've got to let the inspectors in, you've got to stop playing games, you've got to let them see what's there. The inspectors were there, they found nothing. Now, I recognize that Americans thought, many thought, that there could have been weapons of mass destruction there. After all, we had sold them in the past. Donald Rumsfeld, Dick Cheney, they were personally involved in selling these horrible weapons to Saddam Hussein, and so I guess they thought that a few of their old weapons were left around. Well, it was wrong to sell him the weapons, and it was wrong to assume he had them without checking it out. I don't think that many in the world, some would have complained.
Mark.
But I guarantee you, no one in the Democratic Party would have complained if we had discovered weapons of mass destruction and then taken action. Why was it so important for George Bush to act before he actually let the inspectors finish the job?
The UN resolution said that he had to prove transparently to the world that he had divested himself of weapons of mass destruction. He didn't do that. It said, further said that he would face the consequences of taking them away from him by force if he had not been able to prove.
UN says lots of things, and we all know that they don't have to mean what they say.
He refused to do it.
But to say that... We couldn't go back to get an authorization. You remember, I'm sure, Colin Powell wanted to go back to the United Nations to get authorization to go to war. And the argument that the people there made, the argument that many Democrats made, and I happen to know this is a very difficult vote for Democrats. Half voted for it, half voted against it. But even the ones who voted for the authorization, people like Joe Biden, Hillary Clinton, they were saying we've got to use this resolution as a way to force Saddam Hussein to accept inspections. Joe Biden, Hillary Clinton, all of them say we didn't think the president would go to war on this. The purpose of this authorization was to force the inspectors in. Why was it wrong not to let the inspectors finish the job? If the weapons were there, the inspectors find them, that justifies a war.
Mark, the president did use it diplomatically to try and force Saddam to come clean on the whole thing. Remember, from the time the resolution passed till the time the invasion started was months. It was not days. It was months.
Why did we have to attack without the inspectors coming back? That's my question.
The inspectors had pulled out. They said their work was...
The inspectors didn't find anything.
The inspectors had pulled out.
They said, we can't find anything, and they left.
But Saddam failed to prove that he had divested himself, which was required under 114.
He didn't prove that a negative, so it's enough to begin an attack against a war that never attacked
look,
us?
We know he had
a
the
country?
We know for a fact he had the weapons of mass destruction.
Yeah, we know 15 years ago we sold him these awful weapons.
The only question is what he did with them. I personally am convinced that he just shipped them off to Syria when the going got tough. I'm convinced they weren't usable because we gave them to him in the 80s,
and they were decrepit.
Then where were they? He shipped them off to Syria.
We have to take another break. We're going to go on and talk about the Bush legacy in the second half of the hour, but coming up after the break, we have a public service for you. Are you going to the inaugural in Washington, D.C.? Do you know how to get there? Do you know what's closed and what's not closed? What routes are open or not? We're going to give that to you right after the break. And then stay tuned, because Mike Lane and I are far from done. And if you want to call in and challenge either one of us, you're always welcome to do so. 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. Or you can comment on the blog at RadioInsideScoop.com. Back after this.
This is FirstGov.gov, where we're obsessed with getting you government information.
Brand new student loan applications on the site, baby.
This calls for a celebration.
Here's your uncle.
So in the end, it was either take the astronaut gig or come work here. What can I say? Duty called.
Dude, that's my cop.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. No, I'm pretty sure that's Sam's cop.
Oh, sorry?
Yeah. No. Sam's. No.
Just log on or email us and get what you need.
C, change of address form. That's how it's done.
D, driver's license renewal. Mm-hmm.
E, emailing social security information.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice, we'll allow it. All right, Ed.
What are those?
Government surplus cars for auction.
You posted those online last time.
No, you did.
I'm posting them online this time.
For all your government information, firstgov.gov.
Oh, what have we got here? Sometimes you feel tired. You can't seem to lose those extra pounds off your midsection. And your joints hurt when you take the stairs. Well, you're getting older. But I'm happy to say that there's some simple things we can do to keep you happy and healthy for years to come. We can also lower your risk for some serious diseases the older population is often subject to. Proper nutrition is more important than ever. Your body has changed, you know. Not as many treats. a basic exercise plan, lots of walks and fresh air, and most importantly, come and see me for twice yearly checkups to help ensure the best possible quality of life. Now, how does that sound? Good boy.
Improve the quality of life for your elderly pet. Schedule twice yearly checkups that include preventive care and regular lab work. A message from the veterinary members of the American Animal Hospital Association.
Here again, The Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to The Inside Scoop. We will get back to discussing the Bush legacy in just a few moments. But first of all, are you thinking of attending the inauguration? Well, I'll be there, but if you're coming from Virginia, you should probably know that every single bridge is closed. You will not be allowed in by private vehicles. So how are you going to get there? Where will you go? Where will you be allowed to be? What if you have a ticket? What if you don't have a ticket? To answer these questions, I've invited Frank Anderson on the show. Frank Anderson has been active in Virginia Democratic politics for some time, helped to elect Barack Obama. How is it that you know this? You've just studied it, or you have official information?
Thanks, Mark. Well, I do have official information, but it's available anyway. The Secret Service has been giving out this information, and also I was at the inauguration last time, 2005. And a lot of the security setup is going to be quite the same. Yes, all the bridges are closed, but I don't want people to be discouraged against coming to D.C. when they hear about all the traffic and all the crowds they expect. You could still get there. And as a matter of fact, you could still park in Washington, D.C.
Really? Park in Washington, D.C.? Let's show a map, because I think a lot of people may want to find out where everything is. This is a map of... Let's show it up on the screen here. Oh, it's right here behind me. Let's do the big screen, though, because this shows, you can see on the right-hand side of your screen, you can see the Capitol area, and then there's this blue line. That, of course, is Pennsylvania Avenue, and it goes all the way to the White House. The blue line, Frank, that's the parade route, is that right?
Yes, and the important thing to know is that D.C. will literally be cut in half. The north half above the parade route, you'd have a hard time to get around to the southern half. You have the option, you can either go to the parade route, which is inside of the red lines, which means you're going to have to go through a security checkpoint. But if you'd like to go to the National Mall, it'd be much easier. It's going to open at 4 a.m. There won't be any fences like they do on the 4th of July. You can just walk there, and there'll be 22 large monitors and screens that you could watch the event.
Now, this is interesting to me. The map shows there's a... By the way, where can someone get this map if they want to look?
I have copies available to the public. You could email me at anderson.productions@yahoo.com.
Is this available on the Internet as well? Or?
Nobody has made this map yet, but we'll be putting it up on our website here.
Okay, so you can email Frank. We'll get your website again at the end. But I want people to notice this because it's very interesting. The red lines, of course, are where, as Frank points out, you need to go through security. They're actual literal fences. This, of course, is to protect the president-elect, who will be the president at that point, going on the parade route. And to get inside the red fences, do you need a ticket?
No, sir, you don't. No, there's going to be areas open to the public. If you don't have a ticket, you can still watch the parade. Just have to get there very early.
Let's go through the red line, then we're going to get to the yellow line. So over here on the right, we see the Capitol. And then in front of the Capitol is ticketed seating. Now, that would be for those people who got the free tickets that are available that were so hotly sought after in the inaugural. Then there's the parade route. And as Frank points out, if you get there early enough, you can actually go through security, of course, but then you can watch the parade, right? And anyone in the public can do that. No cost.
That's correct. Now, there were a few tickets that went on sale, and they sold out in less than 1 second. Those were for the bleacher seats. But the remainder of the standing area will be open to the public.
They sold out in less than 1 second?
Yep, I was
less
on Ticketmaster.
Less than 1 second.
Mm-hmm, just like that.
Wow. Okay. There is standing room only to watch the parade. But what's interesting about this is that this area of the mall, you can see, of course, the mall, that big green area between the Capitol and the Washington Monument. And if you look on your map there, you see the public viewing area. That is not even gated.
No, sir. No, Mark, it's not going to be gated. You can just walk up there. They're going to do a security sweep at 4 in the morning. And then they're going to open it up just for anybody to go down there. And in fact, you can even bring a folding chair there, but you cannot bring a folding chair to the parade route.
So now, in this public viewing area, of course, the Capitol is some distance away. I'm told there are going to be monitors. You can actually watch on some Jumbotron.
That's right. They've upped the number to 22 Jumbotrons now for people to be able to watch the ceremony happening.
22 Jumbotrons. Mm-hmm. So you can come out on the mall. You don't need a ticket. You don't even have to go through security. You can go on the mall. And now, but there's a ticketed seating. Are we going to be able to see in the distance a tiny dot that is Barack Obama or from the mall? Or is that wishful
possible.
Thinking?
It's possible. That's going to be open. And he's going to be up on the top steps of the Capitol building. So maybe if you have a pair of binoculars, you could actually see it.
Okay. Now, the yellow lines around that are where you have the streets closed and actually around the convention center, apparently, it's closed up there.
Right.
Again, you can get maps from Frank. We'll give his email address in a second. Let's talk about transportation. How are people going to get to the inauguration? Folks in Virginia can't drive across the bridges. How do they get there? There's the metro. That's the main way.
Right. But if you're driving, you could go around the Beltway, either the American Legion Bridge on the top side or on the south side, the Woodrow Wilson Bridge, and come in. You could take 295 and cross the Anacostia River. I'd recommend, if you can, bring a bicycle in your car. Park in Southeast D.C. because the restrictions will be lifted there. As long as you're outside of the brown area where the charter bus parking is, you could park in Southeast and ride a bicycle the rest of the way.
So basically you go into Maryland, go into D.C. from Maryland, mm-hmm. and then either bike or walk in from there.
Right.
You can, of course, also take the metro. If you live in Alexandria, I have to say, I'll tell you how I'm getting there, and I can tell you now because I already got my tickets. I'm taking the water taxi. There's a water taxi that goes from Old Town Alexandria. A nice way, I think, to go to the inauguration in style. I don't have to go through the metro and try to wend my way and push people, crowds out of the way there.
That sounds like fun.
That's how I'm getting there. I hope you do have a chance to see history being made. I'm not going to miss it. I don't know how many people will be there. It'll be a little crowded, but it'll be your fellow Americans all celebrating this day. Frank, give out your email address again so if people want to find that map.
Okay, anderson.productions@yahoo.com, or you could call me at 202-270-9657.
Great. Thanks again, Frank, for coming
Thank
on the
you,
show.
Mark.
We'll come back with Mike Lane and more of the Bush legacy right after this.
Too many women get hit by their boyfriends and husbands. Too many women are pressured into having unprotected sex. Half of the people in the world living with AIDS are women. It doesn't have to be this way. Together, we can change this reality. Let's strive for a world free of violence.
At Volunteers of America, we don't just give kids a way to stay off the streets. We give them the tools they need to reach their full potential. We don't just help the elderly receive needed care. We help them live life to the fullest. We don't just provide food for homeless individuals and families. We provide job training and placement so they can buy groceries. Volunteers of America is a national organization that for over 100 years has provided programs and services that allow people to overcome their challenges to become vital members of their community. At Volunteers of America, we don't just help people. We help people help themselves. Find out how you can support the programs that are working in your community. Contact Volunteers of America today. Call 1-800-899-0089.
Drivers face all kinds of distractions.
Stop playing, no?
127 consecutive.
Before your wireless phone becomes one of them, stop. Drive safely. Keep your phone in easy reach and dial sensibly. In bad weather or traffic, call later and use a hands-free device. Remember, with wireless, safety is your call.
But believe it or not, there's an election going on in between that time. On Tuesday, January 13th, west end of Alexandria City, and parts of the Alexandria part of Fairfax County will have a chance to choose a new delegate for the Virginia House of Delegates to replace outgoing Brian Moran, who's running for governor. Don't forget to vote between 6 a.m. and 7 p.m. on Tuesday, January 13th. Of course, that election is tomorrow. Please, please do your civic duty. Please get out to vote. We're back with Mike Lane talking about the Bush legacy and there will always be disagreement about what we knew and when we knew it about Iraq. I contend that, frankly, without the inspectors finding anything, you don't go to war based on a hunch. But, of course,
it wasn't a hunch, Mark. It was, unanimously concluded intelligence.
It was not unanimous by any stretch.
There was no other intelligence service in the world that didn't, you know, buy into the same conclusion. The British, the French, everybody. Right.
Why did we need inspectors in the first place?
Everybody,
it was so certain.
Everybody, because obviously.
Because we couldn't prove it.
No, because the...
But you would say it's insane. Everybody knew this guy's a killer. Let's just throw him in jail and forgo the trial. To go to war based on no physical evidence, to go to war based on no satellite evidence, to go to war based on a hunch that he might have had some things left over that we sold him in the 1980s, let me suggest to you, has put a black mark on America for decades to come.
The war was fought because Saddam Hussein failed to comply with the applicable 17, in fact, applicable UN resolutions, all of which told him that he was going to lose his country if he didn't comply with them.
It amazes me that Republicans who have a lot of distrust in the United Nations, and I do too, this resolution, this is the one that they're laying their hat on.
No, 17.
At the same time.
17 consecutive resolutions, which Saddam Hussein thumbed his nose out. I mean, he thumbed his nose at the international community and said no way. And he was a brutal dictator who just murdered and slaughtered his people.
Yes, yes.
You know what? As many Iraqis...
Do you know how many brutal dictators who slaughtered their people there are in the world
many,
today?
As many Iraqis who may have died in this operation, more would have died under Saddam Hussein. More died when he used weapons of mass destruction on his own people.
In 1982, when we supplied him with poison weapons, he used them in his war with Iran, and he didn't use them since. I mean, look... Let me. Here's the question I have for you. Democrats, and I remember Joe Biden very clearly saying this, said, let the inspectors finish. I'm going to support this authorization because if the inspectors find something, we need to do something and we need to make sure that Saddam Hussein doesn't keep them out. Was it a mistake not to let the inspectors finish the job before going to war against a country that never attacked?
The inspectors pulled out, Mark. Look, Hussein...
You're not going to answer my question.
No, it was not a mistake. Saddam Hussein was playing a game. He was not going... If he didn't have...
He let them in the palaces in those last few months.
Not unrestricted. He told them where and when they could go.
I don't know if you remember this, because you say, you know, all these countries had... And I don't buy it. France, a country that is... uniformly skeptical of the United States and virtually everything we do.
Not anymore. Not anymore. They have a good president now. A guy named Sarkozy, who's a lot brighter than the one before him.
A day before our invasion of Iraq, said, give us just 30 more days. Give us just 30 more days. And George Bush said no. 30 more days to see if the inspectors can find anything. Bush said no.
Why did France want those 30 days? They wanted them so they could hide the evidence that they had broken the embargo and they were dealing with Saddam Hussein
under the table.
That's why France wanted it.
Let the inspectors do their job.
The inspectors had left the country. They weren't doing it anymore.
They didn't leave the country until we basically told them we're going to attack, and then they left the country. Mike, in hindsight, and I understand hindsight is 2020. Wasn't it a mistake not to let inspectors do their job, find out that there were no WMDs, and in other words, save Americans and Iraqis from what turned out to be a very brutal war?
Iraq, the United States, and the world are better off that Saddam Hussein
so
is no longer
you're
president
saying,
of Iraq.
You're saying that if you'd known at the outset that there were no WMDs.
No, I did not say that.
If you had known then what you know now, that there were no weapons of mass destruction, would you have supported the war in Iraq? That's my question.
If it was known that there were no weapons of mass destruction, if Saddam had come clean, if he had transparently opened all his facilities and he had said, okay, come in, look, here's what we used to have, here's where we got rid of them, here's the documentation on how we got rid of them, all that stuff, we would not have prosecuted that war.
He didn't keep documents very well.
He should have.
I'm just asking you this.
He was required to under the UN resolution to document it.
If the inspectors came back, as they did, and said, look, we didn't find anything, and he's allowing us to go wherever we want to go, and we're not finding anything, we don't have any smoking gun evidence that they're weapons of mass destruction, and people, intelligence, said, look, you know, we don't know, we think it might be there, we're not sure if it's there, was it right to go to war?
If he had let the inspectors go any place they wanted, under any circumstances, do surprise visits, etc., and they
he
came
did
back.
Allow that.
No, he
did.
No, he did. No, he did.
In the months before the war,
he was not letting them go where they wanted to go timetable. He was telling them where they could go, and he was delaying them and obfuscating.
That's a rewriting of history. He did do that for a time, but in the months before the Iraq War, he allowed surprise inspections. He allowed them to go wherever they want to go. We have a caller on the line, George from Fairfax. George, welcome to the Inside Scoop. In your view, what is the Bush legacy?
Oh, the Bush legacy? That's a good question. But can I just shift the topic here just a little
bit? Go right ahead.
Have you done a show on caging?
Caging?
Yeah, because...
Animals?
No.
I think he's talking cage wars or cage fighting or something like that. Right, George?
No, absolutely not. Caging is a Republican strategy that was used to disenfranchise voters by linking their names to all kinds of people who were not allowed to vote. And the point of that was a couple of things that build up, really, because that there was a case in Florida in 98. Catherine Harris was the defendant in that suit, if I recall correctly. And the case was Slenther against Florida. And in that case, they said, you cannot prevent people from voting. And Jeb Bush just went ahead and ignored that. And it just goes on to show that the Republican approach is just a strategy, which is what your co-host there seems to think, that being a Republican strategist is about winning. And it has no benefit to the American public.
Well, George, it's a bit off topic, but I will agree with you on this. I think the Republicans for the last 8 years have made clear that their strategy has always been to try to kick voters off the rolls, to try to do their best to make sure that people can't vote. That has been their strategy from, frankly, before Bush was president. It's still their strategy, and I agree with you. It's disgusting. Every American citizen should have the right to vote. Thank you for your call. I want to get back, though, to other questions about the Bush legacy, because there's a lot more than the war in Iraq. I think that it will always be remembered what happened with the financial crisis. Historians will write about not only the greatest depression since the Great Depression, but how it could have been prevented. If there'd just been appropriate regulation in Washington, if there'd just been a watchdog at the SEC, if we just had an administration that watched out for these kinds of things, we wouldn't be in the financial mess we're in.
Mark, you know that the administration first flagged the need for increased regulation on Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac back in 2001.
It wasn't about them. It was credit derivative swaps that caused the problem,
and they refused to regulate
that.
You know, they pushed it again in 2003. You know that John McCain and several others pushed it again in 2006.
Oh, my God. What a rewrite of history.
And you know, it was Democratic Senator Chris Dodd and Democratic Congressman Barney Frank, your old boss, the two of them who single-handedly prevented any additional regulation on these two organizations.
It's completely false.
The collapse of which has caused the credit crisis that we're in now.
It's completely
that
false.
That is the issue, is Barney Frank and Chris Dodd. First of all, Barney Frank came into power Barney Frank
in January of 2007, and by May had already gotten a bill out of his committee and passed the House to regulate Fannie Mae. Barney Frank in 4 months did what George Bush couldn't do in 6 years. But you know what? Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac are not the source of this crisis.
Why did Barney oppose both Bush initiatives and the McCain initiative? Why did Barney oppose all three of those?
I've answered for Barney. Let's talk about Bush. The problem was not Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. They were a small part of the problem. If you add all the subprime mortgages together combined, it's not more than $10 trillion. Whereas the credit derivative swaps, the gambling on Wall Street, the side bets are more than $60 trillion. You're arguing about a tail. I'm arguing about the dog. And the dog is that this betting on the markets outside the purview of the federal regulators, which George Bush and the SEC under him refused to investigate, to me, is that's the dog here. I mean, you could talk about Bernie Madoff, for example. They didn't investigate him. He's small fry. Everything is small fry compared to these gambling, this credit derivative swaps. We need not be in the financial crisis we're in at all. Home prices could have gone down a bit. We could have had, you know, a minor setback. The major problem is the credit derivative swaps, and George Bush did nothing about those. Yeah. Mary Shapiro, Obama's choice for SEC, she talked about this in 2005, and I'm glad to see that he's picked her because she's someone who saw this was going to happen before it happened.
Well, there's no doubt that we need additional things. You know, the chairman of the SEC has already admitted that he and his agency were asleep. Why were they asleep?
Because Republicans told us that regulation was a bad thing.
Because
Martin Feldstein of the Federal Reserve said, no. Let these people gamble. The private market is always right.
There are rules. The private market is always right. The problem is the private
not
private,
when they're fraud. The private, not no. when they're doing the fraud. Private, not when you have well, credit no. agencies
but
saying you have triple
will,
A bonds of things that turn out to be fraudulent.
The private market will win and lose to excess. And what you want to do is you want to use the heavy hand of government regulation to limit the wins and to limit the losses.
I want to use the heavy hand of government regulation to stop fraud.
Frauds.
You had Moody's and Standard & Poor's.
Frauds will always be caught, and they will always be bounced out.
Moody's and Standard & Poor's are private organizations.
Right.
They gave these bundles of bad subprime mortgages, the ones that everyone had made all these bets on, these swaps, because they didn't want to go under insurance regulations. They didn't call it insurance. They called it a swap, which sounds more like a gun store than it does anything that should
be. I believe
be
in, those are gun shows.
Gun show.
Okay.
Than anything that should be in $65 trillion. They didn't regulate it, and they said they wouldn't regulate it because they didn't believe in such regulation. That's the source of this problem.
No, the source was Barney Frank and Chris Dodd.
It's just not true. It's empirically not true.
Stopping the Bush regulations that they tried to bring.
Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac are not the cause of this problem.
Let
they
me
are
quote,
a small
let me,
part.
Let me quote the George Bush administration report back in 2001. We need a world-class regulator to start overseeing Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. They're too big. And
you can blame Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac all you want.
They're the ones that precipitated
it,
Mark.
AIG precipitated it. Bear Stearns precipitated it. Lehman Brothers precipitated it. These organizations were betting. AIG bet its whole.
Had the credit.
Let me ask you this.
Had the credit markets not frozen up as a result of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, they would still be doing what they were doing.
Never.
Now, would there be a day of reckoning down the road? Perhaps.
Let me ask you this.
But it wouldn't have precipitated when it did if it were not for Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac.
Moody's and Standard & Poor's. Credit rating agencies.
Right.
The highest rating they give, the safest rating, the bond that you can bet is as safe as anything except treasury bills, is called AAA. They've got a whole bunch. There's AAA, AA, single A. Triple B, double B, single B.
Right.
There's
B plus,
C, there's D, and there's F. All right? They have a whole range.
Right.
The A plus is AAA. They declared these bundling of subprime mortgages AAA. And they did it knowing it was fraudulent. And what did our watchdog government do? Absolutely nothing. Let me suggest to you that we shouldn't have private watchdogs. You can have private people all you want, but Moody's, Standard & Poor's, it's the government that should be regulating these things. You shouldn't have a private group saying, oh, yeah, these things are okay when they know it's bad. It is the role of the government to stop fraud. And George Bush said, go ahead, defraud people.
I agree that it's the SEC's job to do that. George Bush said no such thing. It was the Congress who deregulated the financial industries. It was not George Bush who deregulated the financial industries.
Because of this Republican belief that regulation is a bad thing.
It was done on Bill Clinton's watch.
By a Republican Congress.
And signed into law by Bill Clinton. So your attempt to blame...
It was two weeks before Bush came to office.
Bill Clinton for, to blame George Bush for what Bill Clinton did, I think, is a little bit of a stretch, Mark.
The Republican Congress wrote this bill. They put it in an omnibus spending bill. Bill Clinton would have had to shut down the government 2 weeks before George Bush became president to stop this thing. I think it's really extreme that even with that bill,
Bill Clinton could have vetoed
an omnibus spending bill to shut the government down.
He could have.
That he could have done. I grant you that. Let me ask you about something else that I think will always be remembered. In fact, to me, this incident will always be remembered as the part where the emperor, everyone saw he had no clothes. I really think this is the part where even Republicans said of George Bush, huh? And I'm talking, of course, about Katrina. You're talking about an attack on the United States. September 11th, 3,000 Americans died. In Louisiana, 1,000 Americans died. It is the greatest disaster probably since the earthquakes and fires at the turn of the 20th century when we really couldn't do much about them. We had tens of thousands of Americans, mostly poor, mostly African Americans, stranded. And the person that George Bush hired to take charge of this was a person who had no emergency training whatsoever, Mike Brown, a person of whom George Bush said, Brownie, you're doing a heck of a job. He was an Arabian horse trader, and in the midst of Katrina, he couldn't be reached. He was having a nice meal in a nice restaurant. Clearly, George Bush made an error in appointing Brown, in saying Brown was doing a heck of a job, and in failing to watch over this and take charge of this when it happened.
There's no defending Brownie, as he's unaffectionately known these days. FEMA didn't do what it should have done, but I'm not going to let you throw the whole thing on FEMA. It was a three-way flop. The city of New Orleans was a total disaster. Mayor Nagin couldn't even keep his police force there. They all abandoned their watch, and they left town themselves and left the people to fend for themselves. That governor who was running the state at the time, Kathleen Blanco, was so much of a disaster, and the people of Louisiana realized what a disaster she was. She didn't even run for re-election, knowing she would have been slaughtered by anybody who ran against her in her own primary or on the other side. It was a three-way failure. The city of New Orleans, the state of Louisiana, and FEMA all blew it.
Of course, what you failed to mention is that Blanco wanted to have the government send in help, wanted, in fact, the National Guard sent in.
It was
George Bush was sending the Louisiana National Guard to Iraq rather than having them there to protect the people of New Orleans.
The actual story on that, Mark, is that the president can't send the help in until the governor requests it. And the governor sat on her hands and didn't request it because
she requested it before the hurricane occurred.
She wouldn't request it. She waited and waited and
waited. She did it before the hurricane occurred, and Bush said
Department of Homeland Security
they wanted
Homeland Security.
Do you remember this?
Called her and said, "Please request us.
And
we want to come in." And she said, "No, I'm not requesting you."
Mike, the documents are signed by her, Kathleen Blanco. Signed by her prior to Katrina beginning. Here's the thing.
They wanted to come in 4 days in advance. She signed them 24 hours in advance. She wasted 72 hours.
I'm glad you admitted that she did sign them. Here's the thing. I saw George Bush give a press conference today. Most of it was, kind of nice, I think, and he's leaving office and he's trying to be nice for the next president. I respect that. I think that's good. But when asked what mistakes he made, it was interesting to me when talking about Hurricane Katrina, he believed it was a public relations mistake. He said, I could have flown into Baton Rouge, and if I had, then they would have taken people away to defend me. What George Bush conveniently forgot is where he was the morning of Katrina. I'm sure you remember, he was at John McCain's birthday party, baking a cake and celebrating with him in Arizona and not focusing on the crisis. To me, Katrina was far more than a public relations disaster. It was a human disaster. Never before have we had an American city suffer from a natural occurrence. I mean, again, you'd have to go back to the earthquakes of 1904 to find a comparable example. George Bush fell down on the job.
Mark, what the president also said this morning during his press conference was that, you said, where were the feds during Katrina? The feds got in there and took 30,000 people out of there, off rooftops and out of places, out of trees, places where they couldn't escape the ravaging flood. They evacuated 30,000 people with boats, helicopters, etc., while the floodwaters were ravaging. That's what the feds did.
Let's give them credit for it. But to me, the real mistake, and to me, Katrina is just the most dramatic symptom of this. The reason why Katrina happened was not because there was a massive hurricane that hit New Orleans. Hurricanes come and go with New Orleans. The reason why we had the massive damage and the massive loss of life was because the levees broke. And to me, the breach of the levees in New Orleans typifies the crumbling infrastructure that I also think George Bush will be famous for. The bridge collapse in Minnesota. The newspaper, the New Orleans Times-Picayune, was practically begging the administration, we need more money to shore up the levees. And instead, the administration was spending money on tax cuts in Iraq as American bridges and levees crumbled to the ground.
Mark, you got to read more papers. It has come out recently that the bridge collapse in Minnesota was not because of crumbling infrastructure. It was because of a ridiculously underspecced part that was put in there
when they first built it.
No, it was 60 years ago when they built it.
That's why you have inspections, Mike.
You wouldn't notice it was an underspecced part. There's no way.
Yes, you would.
You wouldn't notice.
Our time is almost up. To me, George Bush will always be remembered for corruption, for incompetence, for breaches of the Constitution, for war, for depression, and for massive deficits. There may be some good there. All I can think of is the daylight savings time. But Mike, I appreciate your coming on the show. And next week will be the inaugural of a new president, Barack Obama.